It is 3:06 on Friday afternoon. This is Political Rewind. We're coming to you live from the Midtown Atlanta studios of Georgia Public Broadcasting. And that's right, it is Friday. It's Friday, Jim Galloway.
I've got spring fever. Let's go. Let's get this over with. Let's get it done.
Yeah, unfortunately, apparently the weather's going to get a little colder, but we're not here to give the weather report. We're here to talk serious politics. Jim Galloway, the political writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, joins me. Glad to have you here, Jim. You read him on Thursdays and Sundays in a little while. We're going to give you a preview of what he's already written about. He's already filed a Sunday column, which you'll be able to read in the Sunday paper. And I'm really happy that we've got back with us today Andy Miller, the editor of Georgia Health News. I don't know anybody who I'd rather learn about health care and the new bill that the GOP has proposed than you, Andy. Thanks for coming in.
Good to be here, Bill. And I'll tell you, it's a learning experience right now.
It certainly is. We really want you to participate in the show today. So if you're not following us on Twitter, you ought to, at PoliticsGPB. And we want to hear your thoughts. Do you think you know anything about this bill at this point? What you do know, do you like, do you not like? Do you like Obamacare? Are you covered by it? And do you think it's been a pretty good plan for you? How are you feeling about health care in general? If you have questions, we'd be glad to try to answer them as we go through the show today. Let's start because, Andy, excuse me, because Tom Price, of course, is HHS secretary, is in the middle of all of this. I thought a good starting point would be to listen to an exchange he had this morning on MSNBC. He came in to talk about the GOP plan, and Willie Geist, one of the hosts of the show, tried to pin him down on whether anybody would lose coverage under this proposal. Let's listen to that back and forth.
So we don't believe that individuals will lose coverage at all so long as they're able to select the kind of plan that they want for themselves and for their family.
So just to be clear, Mr. Secretary, initially, if this plan were signed into law, no one would lose their health care?
Well, nothing changes for 2017, as you know. But they may be moved from a plan that they currently have to a plan that's much more desirable for them to have. The thing that the previous administration did is to force people to buy health coverage that they may not want or can't use because of the increased premiums and the increased deductibles.
So that's Tom Price talking to Willie Geist. Well, Jim, I didn't hear an answer there. Did you?
If you were a skeptic, you might say, yeah, you'll be able to afford insurance, but it might not cover nearly as much.
Well, and here's the other thing I heard there, Andy. He said, well, you know, he essentially said, well, the nice thing is nobody will lose any of their health care in 2017. Well, that's right, because in 2017, Obamacare is still the law of the land, and the people who have it will have it through 2017, right?
That's correct. But the estimates range from anywhere from 3 million people all the way up to 15 million that will lose coverage under the new health plan. The CBO is supposed to come out early next week with their projection, and that'll be very interesting to watch.
Yeah, CBO being the Congressional Budget Office. And as the show goes on, we're going to talk about why their estimate, who they are, what they do, and why their estimate is eagerly anticipated by many people, not only on Capitol Hill, but people who are following this debate all over the country. Let's do this. Our goal today is to start by just helping people understand a very complicated proposal. In fact, it's kind of simple if you break it down, but it's complicated because of all of the tax issues involved, the subsidies involved. So, Andy, we're going to walk through this in a very basic way. Does that make sense to you?
It does indeed.
All right. So I'd like to start with this, and you jump in.
Okay.
Here are the things that the new American Health Care Act, which is what they call this bill, preserve from Obamacare. The new bill covers pre-existing conditions. It continues allowing families to keep a grown child up to age 26 on the family plan. It does extend tax credits. It does remove lifetime limits on coverage. And it does cover, and this we'll talk about in more detail, people who currently have Medicaid. Have I got that right so far?
Now, if I could jump in here, I think every one of those points that Bill just rattled off has a caveat. Am I correct?
Well, Many of them do.
They do, and what Bill says is correct. I mean, the popular things in Obamacare have been preserved. The kids up to age 26, the pre-existing conditions, the no lifetime caps on coverage. But this is far from Obamacare light, in my estimation, in the estimation of many people, because it fundamentally redoes the healthcare system.
And that's right. And we're going to talk about that. But I just wanted, as a baseline, to say these are things that are included in the bill. Now, as Jim, you point out, there are things that are worth getting in more detail about. Number one is the tax credits that come from government on this. And that's particularly important. And really, so is the conversation about Medicaid. So let's start with the tax subsidies. How about that?
Okay. So
what's the difference?
Well, in Obamacare, the subsidies or tax credits are based on income, sliding scale. The less you make, the more of a more credit or subsidies you get. But under the GOP plan, they're based almost entirely on age. And so some people will come out as winners under the change if this bill gets passed, and some people will end up losers. In other words, get less tax credit under the new plan.
So if you are a younger, poor person, you are likely to lose out.
Well, younger is important, Jim, and this is why. Because if you're young, 27 years old, making $50,000 a year, you come out ahead because you'll get a tax credit. Under the Obamacare plan, you didn't. It capped out at about $48,000.
Mm-hmm. The tax credits range from about $2,000 to about $4,000. I think that's the basic range. It is as you look at all of the ages that are involved, right?
Right. But there's no difference in the new plan, taking into account whether you're in a high-cost area or not. For instance, Southwest Georgia, believe it or not, is one of the highest-cost areas in the country. So the tax credit that you'll get under the GOP plan will end up covering much less than the ACA credit because the Affordable Care Act built that geographical difference into the premium.
And in Southwest Georgia, that's a delivery issue, right?
Well, it's both. There's only one insurer there mm-hmm. in the exchange, and there's only one major hospital system.
So when you talk about high cost, you're talking about the cost of healthcare delivery and insurance. That's what you mean by high cost.
There's a double monopoly there.
So yes. The Atlantic Constitution, Jim, your news organization, took a look at a lot of this, did some figuring based on the Kaiser Foundation, which has really studied this, Andy, right?
Very extensively.
And here's just a couple of numbers that support what you both are saying. A 27-year-old making $30,000 a year would see her tax credit increase by $1,320 under the new plan, from $680 under Obamacare. At the same time, a person who makes $20,000 would see his credit decrease by $200. Now, see, right away, I'm puzzled by this, Andy.
Well, that's the key of getting, making these credits, uniform across all income groups. And the people that are going to get hurt the worst, Bill, are the people who are lower to moderate income and in their 50s and 60s.
Yeah, I mean, according to the AJC study, again, Kaiser mm-hmm. Foundation, I should say, a 60-year-old who makes $20,000 a year would have her credit slashed by $3,000+, while someone the same age making twice as much, $40,000 a year, would see their credit reduced by about $110. Now, I know it's hard to keep all these figures in your head, but the point is, I find, Jim, this is an odd way to decide how we give tax credits.
And this is what's causing such angst in Republican ranks, because you just described a 50-ish woman earning $20,000 a year. You just described a Trump voter right there.
Right. And AARP is on the record calling this an age tax, essentially, and they're definitely against it and mobilizing people to lobby Congress against it.
So one of the Republicans' theories around why they do it this way, Andy, is it older people need health care more than younger people. It's certainly true, typically, that older people have more need for care, right?
That's absolutely correct.
Okay.
But one of the things you have to keep in mind that a lot of these folks are not exactly kind of in job lock situations, or more sometimes they're only working part-time now, and if they're lower income, they're going to get hurt under this, according to all the estimates.
Okay, so here's the other thing. Let's move ahead and continue to talk about the differences in the bill. The individual mandate is gone, and
very unpopular among Republicans.
Sure, certainly. Because this is the Obamacare provision that says you must have health insurance or you'll pay a penalty at tax time.
Well, that was the Massachusetts model that
Mitt
Romney
yeah.
introduced mm-hmm. it. And basically the theory goes like this. If you're uninsured and you go to a hospital and you get care there, somebody has to pay for that. And if the uninsured person can't pay for that, well, guess who pays? It's people who with private insurance who are paying higher premiums for that because the hospital costs go up and they charge the insurance companies. Plus, the taxpayers do. I know that we pay in Fulton and DeKalb County, we pay tax to Grady Hospital to help support them.
Okay, but Jim, the mandate was not just plucked out of thin air as some way in which the Obama administration wanted to punish you for not having health care. Why are individual mandates so important?
Well, because you've got insurance companies who are being asked to cover pre-existing conditions. And you can't do that without a larger pool of money.
You've got to have
a larger pool of customers.
You've got to have, if I'm right about this, younger, healthy people paying into that pool to subsidize the needs of those older people who, it's quite correct, have more need for medical services.
Right. The most common parallel that people use is car insurance.
Yes.
Car insurance is mandated in Georgia and pretty much most other states. And that is because if you run into a person without insurance, then you are left picking up the bill.
Right. And that's the deal that the Obama administration made with the insurance companies. We'll give you these young, healthy people, but we want you to cover the older people, the people with pre-existing conditions.
And this is really where the rubber meets the road on the new plan, isn't it, Andy? Because there are questions as to whether you can possibly cover, as Jim alluded to, pre-existing conditions if you don't have that larger pool. How are insurance companies going to be able to handle all of this without a bigger pool?
Well, it's an excellent question. I mean, there's talk in Congress and in this new law about setting up these high-risk health insurance pools. And before Obamacare, there were a couple of states that did them pretty well, but they were well funded. Whereas other states, these things were very limited in terms of benefits and enrollment. And in some states, including Georgia, we had a law on the books to have a high-risk pool, but it was never funded.
So what does it mean, a high-risk pool? I mean, I get it. We all know it means people who have...
These are the people who have been branded with the A of pre-existing conditions.
Yeah, the P of pre-existing conditions.
You know, they are the Heather Prinz of the medical
well,
world.
How do you create
it,
that pool?
It could be something like diabetes or asthma, or it could be something like
how do they fund
cancer.
That pool? Their proposal?
It will well that they are allowing states. They've got this $100 billion for states to do these experimental plans. So they haven't really spelled it out.
Okay.
Under the Trump plan or under the GOP plan, states will have more authority and more power over health care than ever before.
All right. Here's another interesting thing about this: if you remove the individual mandate, if you don't require everyone to have health insurance. One of the other interesting aspects of this plan, you know, the Republicans like to say this is going to bring insurance costs down. And certainly Donald Trump, President Trump, has said that over and over again. But so here's part of their proposal. If you choose to opt out of insurance, if you decide not to get insurance, and then you get sick and you want to get into a plan, this proposal allows insurance companies to charge you a 30% premium for joining because you've dropped out at a previous time or never got in the first place, right?
That's correct. And there's a lot of people who believe that won't induce the young invincibles to get insurance. In other words, they'll gamble. The 30% is for a year. They're on top of their normal premium. But it may not be enough to keep and to get new, young, invincible, healthy people.
I love the fact that you call them young invincibles. The other word I keep hearing, the talk on the Hill, young immortals, which I suppose I thought I was when I was, say, 25, too, Jim Galloway.
Not so much today. I think we're a trio of old men here.
Yeah, we're heading toward mortality.
All right. Let's talk about one other aspect of this. We're going to, just getting these baselines down, then we can jump into the politics of all this. Medicaid is a fascinating aspect of this. We think, 10 million people now have ACA, Obamacare, through Medicaid, which means almost half of the people who have Obamacare are getting it through Medicaid, right?
Yeah, just 31 states did it. I mean, not all, including Georgia, did not. But yes, 11 million people picked up coverage. And these are generally single, low-income adults who got this coverage. And it's going to be started to phase out in 2020. There's some talk to even move that timetable up to 2018. But there's a second piece of the Medicaid change that's maybe even more important, and that is what Congress is thinking about doing is making this a block grant program, giving a set amount of money to the state per enrollee and say, you figure this out. This is what we're going to give you. You spend the money. You make all the rules. It's called a block grant program.
Okay, now let me ask you this, and this is very important for Georgia.
Yes.
Is, okay, let's take Ohio and let's take Georgia. Okay, roughly parallel states, I think, in terms of population.
Yes.
Ohio has expanded Medicaid.
Yep.
Georgia has not.
Right.
If these block grants go into effect, and Ohio's block grant is based on its current number of Medicaid, does Georgia get screwed in this issue?
Well,
this issue?
Let me give you two answers to that.
Okay. All right.
First of all, it's based on 2016 spending. Georgia has a very low per enrollee spending rate.
Mm-hmm.
It's like second lowest in the country, I think, behind Nevada or something like that. So if it's constructed along those lines, we're not going to do well if they base it on 2016 spending. It's definitely not going to be good. But in terms of the Medicaid expansion, Ohio, as you said, has expanded. Georgia has not. What Georgia and other non-expansion states will share a pool of money is something like, or they'll get like something like $10 billion over 5 years in terms of new safety net funding to kind of cushion them versus the states that expanded.
So they won't. So Georgia would not be punished for its refusal.
Speaker Ralston and Governor Deal have actually expressed concerns that maybe we won't do as well as the expansion states, or maybe we'll be sort of penalized, as you say. So there are concerns now.
You know, on the other side of this, Jim, excuse me, since the passage of ACA, Obamacare, Governor Deal, on a number of occasions, he's been under a certain amount of heat to explain why he did not take advantage of the federal money to expand Medicaid here in Georgia, and his answer always has been what?
It's always been that the federal government is paying for it now, but you can never count on them, and they will back out.
Which is so ironically, it's his own Republican administration now that is making this potential change, but he had a point. Maybe.
he had a point, but it's, look, this is, and I don't know if we want to get into the politics of,
sure
this,
we do.
Of it yet, but this is, for Republicans, this is really dangerous. There's a reason that John Kasich has got an op-ed in today's New York Times saying we need to bring Democrats into this. It's the same reason that David Ralston got up this week in Georgia and said we need a plan to save rural Georgia.
Yeah, and we're okay. That's exactly what we're going to get to. Before we go further down that road, though, I want to go back to another issue in terms of this new plan, in terms of where the money is coming from. So, right now under Obamacare, there is not only is there an individual mandate and do people have to buy insurance, there's a corporate mandate. Businesses that do not participate, do not offer a group plan to their employees, are penalized, and that money helps pay for some of this, right?
Right, and employers with 50 or more employees have to cover or they face a penalty. But let's look at all the tax money in the ACA, that revenue coming in that is going to go away. First of all, you have the tax on the top 1% who will see under the GOP plan probably a $250,000 hike in their income, because that tax is going to go away. Also, there's medical device makers have a tax. Pharmaceutical companies have a tax. And so there was all this
revenue. Don't forget our tanning bed.
The tanning salons, yes. Yeah, they were taxed as well, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so all that revenue, all that tax revenue is going to go away under the Republican plan. And so it'll be very interesting to see what the CBO says in terms of, will this new plan add to the deficit?
All right. I have just been told in no uncertain terms by a visitor who is sitting in our control room, happens to be my daughter, that we better get a break in right now. And she's right. It's 3:27 or so, and you're listening to Political Rewind. So let's take a break. We'll come right back and talk more about healthcare.
If life were like a comic book,
Daredevil, Batman,
then last year, after his wife died, comedian Patton Oswalt should have turned into a superhero.
Travel the world learning martial arts and doing CrossFit.
Right?
That's not been my experience. When you lose someone, you tend to eat Wheat Thins for breakfast and rewatch The Princess Bride about 80 times.
Patton Oswalt, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
You can listen from 4 to 7 right here on JPB.
You're listening to Political Rewind here on Georgia Public Broadcasting, an 18-station radio network of GPB. GPB Atlanta is licensed to Georgia State University, ranked among the top universities in the nation in commitment to undergraduate teaching.
So we're back on Political Rewind. Andy Miller of Georgia Health News, my colleague Jim Galloway of the AJC, join us. We're going to continue talking about the new health care plan, the American Health Care Act. By the way, I love the fact that the White House is saying, don't call this Trump care.
So what are people calling it? Well, they're calling it Trump care.
Well, let's not forget, it wasn't the Democrat, it wasn't the Obama administration that chose to call it Obamacare. They called it, ACA.
Right, but Obama actually embraced it after a while.
Yeah, he did. That's exactly right. Yeah. He ended up thinking it was great. We've gotten people tweeting. You can tweet us at PoliticsGPB. Jim Guess, who tweets as Buzzsucker, says, I think ACA is flawed, but ACHA, the new one, is worse. What are the arguments against single payer? It seems like a no-brainer solution. All right. So, Andy, that's a great question, but it also raises for me a question that I've never quite gotten in my head. What exactly do people mean when they talk about single payer?
Well, there are two versions of it, but basically it means that everybody who does not have an employer plan would be in Medicare. So everybody has insurance, and you have a private system over here. This is kind of what kind of like Germany has. And then you have everybody else who's low income or doesn't get job-based care or elderly. They're all in the Medicare system. So everybody has coverage. And this
but they've all got it through the government.
Well, no, not necessarily. Well,
not necessarily. If it's Medicare, isn't it all through the government?
Yes, but you can still preserve the private employer system in that kind of setup. And you know, so people who work for the
AJC or something like that. Group insurance stands.
Right.
But everybody else,
everybody else is
a government health is getting government health care.
Exactly.
Okay.
Philosophically, obviously, Republicans and conservatives, you know, that's the last thing they want to see happen. But there have been a lot of people over the years who have predicted that eventually the American system will end up there. Now, it might take decades, or it might be less than that. Who knows?
Jim J.A. Pastor tweets, "So glad you are explaining why there was a mandate, plus that it came from Romney, Massachusetts. You reporter types don't make that connection enough."
We do that all the time.
I think we do.
Maybe we just don't say it enough.
Well, we reported how Romney twisted around when asked about that when he was running for president.
At some point, wasn't Scott Walker calling it Obama Romney care or something like that? Yeah.
Hey, you know, Jim, we have big shoulders. If people want to criticize us, that's fine. We get it from everybody. Okay. This is paper, tweets. GOP says we can see our own doctor in their plan. Did Obamacare really dictate who you see for care? And, of course, that conjures up for us that famous misstatement by President Obama, or maybe it was a misstatement. Don't worry, you'll be able to keep your doctor. That was an almost read my lips moment for Barack Obama, although he survived re-election, whereas President Bush didn't.
Yeah, that was a mistake. I mean, I don't know who advised him to say that or whatever, but in the private health insurance market, your employer can suddenly, one year to the next, switch insurance companies. And then you got a different network. And then you have to go to a different doctor. So there was no guarantee.
It never has been your choice.
No. It's not guaranteed. Let's put it that way.
Well, we should say, though, that increasingly there are many group plans, I think I'm right about this, that mandate, unless you're willing to pay an exorbitantly high premium out of your own pocket, that you work with doctors within a given group, which is really not quite the same as being able to choose your own doctor, right?
Right. Well, that's insurance. I mean, you know, you have a choice. I mean, you can go outside of your network, but you're going to pay.
But you're going to pay more for it.
Okay. Now, let me. Maybe this isn't the right time to start talking about this, but you already have had President Trump on Twitter saying that eventually we're going to shift to, you're going to be able to buy insurance from other states.
Well, that's the question. Right now, you cannot. Can't you buy across state lines now? Isn't it?
Georgia has had a law for several years allowing this to happen. And there have been zero insurance companies that have done this.
So why don't insurance companies want to do it? Because Trump touts that as one of the most important.
Yeah, but they can't do that right now because so much coverage is mandated. Correct.
Well, what the issue is for insurers is it's difficult to insurance comes down to local networks, and if you have a Montana plan that you want to sell in Georgia, you still have to make deals with the doctors and the hospitals in Georgia. And administratively, it's a difficult thing to do. It's never really worked, this selling across state lines.
And there's also the fear that mandates would disappear.
That was the original fear, absolutely.
And does that still exist? Is that still a matter of worry?
Well, it's not as much with the 10 essential benefits that are out there under Obamacare, and evidently that's not going to change under the GOP plan.
Ted Barfield, who tweets us frequently, asks a good question. Might there be more than one insurer, say, in Southwest Georgia? He's talking about under this new law, once the Affordable Care Act exchanges go away. He's suggesting the possibility that with more free market competition, that those underserved areas where it's going to cost more for health care suddenly might have competition. What about that?
It's certainly possible. I it could happen that way. Certainly we do need, there's one Republican point that's very valid is the fact that in one third of the counties in America, we only have one insurer in the exchange. So anything that can be done to increase that competition is a good thing.
The problem is that in order to change that dynamic, you have to change the depopulation trend in many of these places, including rural Georgia.
Kashmu's tweets, Congress should have to apply for insurance the way private citizens do. They have it easy and can't relate to the difficulties. Interesting point.
I think Lindsey Graham actually did that, didn't he? Did he say that recently, that he decided he wanted to get on the exchange just to see what it was like, and he talked about what a horrible
slumming. Lindsey Graham slumming.
Yeah, I think it was.
You're right. I think it was. Yeah.
Okay. So, all right. Thank you. Do we miss anything that's really kind of an essential building block in how this is going to work, Andy? Because if not, we should talk politics about it.
But no, I think it's more of a political question. The new plan is getting heat from both sides of the Republican Party. So it'll be interesting to know what you guys think about it.
Well, we'd like you to weigh in on this, too. But, you know, Jim, that's right. Here we go. So we know that this is a promise Republicans have made for years. We're going to get rid of Obamacare once we're in charge. But we also know repeal and then replace is tricky. You can repeal, but you got to come up with a plan to replace. So the leadership under Paul Ryan finally decided, and we don't know for a fact, but we assume because Trump is now on board with White House buy-in, they've decided, you know what, enough of this bickering back and forth, enough of this hearing people complain. We're just going to shove it down their throats and see what Republican members are unwilling to vote
exactly.
For this.
Our arm twisting time has begun. But what we've got is we have got a crucial decision that this bill must be approved only through Republican votes. And you could only, what's the bleed off here? Maybe 29 votes?
Yeah, I mean, it's come down to that. I mean, Democrats have said, look, if you want to help fix Obamacare, we're here to talk.
All right, so they're moving so fast. They introduced the bill on Monday. They've already had it. They had two all-night sessions in Ways and Means and what other committee?
I think it was Energy and Commerce.
May have been Energy and Commerce. Yeah. Two all-night sessions
to push. Yeah, one lasted 27 hours.
Yes,
yeah.
And each of those committees have a piece of this, and they're ready. They're moving. They're not waiting for anything. And one of the things they're not waiting for is the Congressional Budget Office, which is a neutral referee to say, oh, this is how many people may lose coverage, and this is how much this plan is going to cost.
And that second part is really, really important.
And as well it should be, because they're, as I said before, they're getting rid of a lot of the revenue that was brought in that the Obamacare plan did. And so we'll have to see, but I can't see any way that it won't add to the deficit.
So
they won't have a vote on this until the CBO speaks, but it's going to be right after that. I think the CBO is supposed to come out next week. Is that right?
Early next week. And the Trump administration is already kind of working the refs on this and saying, well, maybe the CBO isn't all
that's the Congressional Budget Office,
yes.
By the way.
Yes. So right. Earlier this week, Sean Spicer in a daily press briefing said, well, if you're looking for CBO to be a guide, forget about that. Today, Tom Price on Morning Joe said a similar thing. He said, well, you know, you can't count on CBO.
Oh, you can't trust these appointees that these Congress people put in this job. I mean,
so what happens next week when?
But who put this guy in? In charge of the CBO?
The Republicans did.
Oh, okay.
Including right. Tom Price's budget chair.
Okay.
So what happens, Jim, when next week the price tag comes in and it's sticker shock and the Republican leadership has committed itself, but you've still got Freedom Caucus members out there. You've still got other Republicans out there, certainly Democrats against it. This could be a real train wreck.
And you've got the Freedom Caucus that's going to be looking at a very, very tough vote. Do they want to say no to this and demand less government control of health care in the United States? Or do they want to face the fury of Donald Trump? Because that's what they're going to face.
And Donald Trump has said, look, I want to make the White House is saying, look, let's make some deals here. We need to get this thing done.
Now, and the thing is, at the same time, you've got Tom Cotton on the Senate side, where you do need, you need Tom Cotton, you need Ted Cruz, you need Rand Paul.
Yeah.
If you lose those three, you don't have your 51%, your 50 votes plus one, and Cotton has said, you guys got to start over.
Yeah, I get this. You know, every time I see Speaker Ryan up there in front of the cameras, just he's so joyous about this. He keeps saying this is so exciting. It's what this seems to me to be the Republicans. I mean, look, they may win. They may end up doing this. Trump may end up going out and campaigning for this in districts where he needs Republican. So he may win. But he's awfully happy for a guy who's got a really tough battle on his hands in the weeks ahead.
Right. And you know, you're going to have to live with, if this goes through as a Republican, and if you vote for it, and the president as well, you're going to have to live with the anecdotes of people losing insurance. And there will be plenty of them if the estimates are correct.
Yeah, that's...
But let me say something. We haven't seen horse trading on this level since the ACA went through in 2009. So some of the starkness of this is just the fact that, my gosh, people are actually making deals.
Yeah, but it strikes me. So we hear that. We hear that some of the Republicans, and we've heard that from Georgia members.
Right,
who are saying,
right. But what I'm saying is what the House is doing right now and what the Freedom Caucus, I think the argument that's being pitched to the Freedom Caucus is, look, we're just floating the shell of the ship right now. We're just launching it.
See, here's what I question. This is such a complicated financial equation. There are so many pieces that have to come together just right, that this is why Democrats, when they were in control, just pushed it through the way Republicans are now, because when you start horse trading, this whole thing can come completely undone, right?
Right, but let's look at what happened with the Obama administration, how they got different interest groups on board. They gave the insurance companies, they said, look, we'll get the young, healthy people in there. They talked to the hospitals and physicians, and they said, well, we're going to cover more people, you're going to get more reimbursement, plus we're going to take care of people. And they stayed away, basically it stayed away from the drug companies. And so they got all these interest groups on board. They got AARP on board. Now, it's just the opposite, where the hospital groups, the doctor groups, the nurses, even the health plans have come out and criticized this new plan.
So the question now is, will they be brought? Is this a process into which they'll be brought?
Yeah.
It might be difficult the way it's set up. If they think that the people are going to lose coverage, it might be a little bit more difficult. Now, I think they can get the insurers on board, because one thing the insurers will be able to do will be charge young people less and older people more, because the rate band changes. Instead of being able to charge only three times an older person, three times more than a younger person, now it goes to five times. And so they like that piece of it.
All right. We have to take a break. Get our last break of the show out of the way at 3:43. When we come back, Jim Galloway, I want to ask what seems like a really fundamental question, but I really want to try to see what the answer is, which is, why are they doing this? As I watch it unfold, I, honest to goodness, I get the political side. They said they're going to dismantle Obamacare. But as they've started to do it, I don't get it, and I want to hear what you think about all that. Let's take our final break of the show, and we'll be back and keep talking healthcare. We're at Politics GPB. Thanks for listening and for tweeting back to us. We'll be right back.
Peter Sagal here, and if you're in your car, I want you to try something. Roll up the windows. You're all sealed inside. Take a good smell. Can you smell that? That was the great cologne experiment of 2004. You should not have gone with the dollar store for that one. Well, you can lose that old car smell by donating your vehicle to one of your favorite causes, like public radio. It only takes a few minutes, and just like that, you've supported the station, and well, you are on your way to a life of better smells.
Go to gpb.org/cars and thanks.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. Andy Miller of Georgia Health News, Jim Galloway with me. Okay, so Jim, I know there are lots of problems with Obamacare. Everybody knows it was not perfect. Everybody knows premiums were going up. Deductibles were going up. There were issues. But this dismantling and starting over again, as we watch it unfold, just as an observer, I'm saying to myself, Why are they doing this?
John Boehner is saying the same thing.
Yeah.
Because his idea was, okay, yeah, we've promised for 7 years to repeal and replace, but let's really just, let's just rebrand and call it replacing. And that would be, that you would think that would be the political expedient thing to do. But they can't do that. And now what they've done is they've got themselves into a corner where everything they do kind of complicates their own situation with their base.
Yes.
And it's kind of a push away from government, big government entitlement programs. And this is something that Republicans have pushed for years in different sectors, not just healthcare. The only problem with that is government is in healthcare big time. You've got Medicare and Medicaid covering 120 million people. Government isn't getting out of healthcare. Now, this might reduce a little bit of it, but I think it's a philosophical thing that Republicans are really looking to shrink
government. But the cost of this is, look, what the Trump, if you had to characterize the Trump victory in November, it was a primal scream for security among people who feel threatened. They don't have enough job. They don't have the jobs. They don't have access to that health care. Obama hasn't been a help to them. And now you're throwing in more insecurity into the mix.
You know, this feels like it is. Andy, right before we went on the air, you made this point as we were getting set to do the show. This has always been Republican orthodoxy. Less government, more free market competition. Except that's Republican orthodoxy from a different era. That isn't who their base is anymore. Their base is the people you're talking about, Jim Galloway, folks who say, give me a job, help me get ahead in life.
And help me bridge those 5 or 6 years that I've got to I can qualify
for
Medicare.
So in a way, Trump is ahead of the curve. He got that. But this plan, like a number of other things on the Hill, makes it feel like the leadership doesn't understand this shift.
Well, the interesting thing, Bill, about polls is, and you know, we all know how important they are, is Obamacare is doing better than ever in among the public. I mean, more people approve of it than disapprove.
All right, let's go over. We've gotten a lot of tweets. Ed Reed says, haven't the Dems won regardless, no matter what? There will be some form of federal health care. Now we're just squabbling about the details. That's pretty interesting. I suppose you could say that's sort of true.
Well, I think they obviously would really like to keep Obamacare and just fix the problems in it. I'm not sure that that's a long-term strategy, that's a winning strategy. I think I don't underestimate the president. I mean, I underestimated him vote-wise.
Yeah, but what he's saying is, as long as there is some federal plan that helps subsidize health care, in a way, Democrats have won because they opened the door by passing Obamacare. Isn't that basically correct?
Well, that's true, and this plan will, you know, has continued to get rid of pre-existing conditions, which is a very good thing, and that was a government thing.
Let's talk about this in terms of Georgia politics for a few minutes. Okay,
sure.
Jim. And one of the places we always, first of all, we know that there are Republican members on the Hill of the Georgia delegation, and there's mixed feeling about it up there. There's certainly no unanimity, but mostly the line, if they're not supporting it wholeheartedly, they're saying, well, it's a beginning and we'll see how it unfolds.
Yeah, you may have a couple of desertions on the Republican side. Jody Heiss is probably your most likely of Monroe. He's your most likely apostate, but I think most of the others will end up sticking with, not with just Paul Ryan, but remember, this is Tom Price as well. And so there's some state loyalty here. And I think what you have to remember is if I could go back to this rural Georgia issue, all right?
Sure.
Okay. Donald Trump didn't win Georgia by a large margin. He almost lost it to Hillary Clinton. The only reason he carried it is because he did better in the 131 states out of outside of metro Atlanta.
Yeah.
Romney got 59%, Trump did 61%.
Yeah, that's really a good point, Jim. And those are the people who need help.
Those are the people that need help. And if you sell them down the river on this, it's going to be hard to get them back.
And their economies in these areas are, believe it or not, healthcare is a huge part of these economies. If their hospital is closing, and we've had five rural hospitals close recently in the last 3 years, their economic development is shot because no company wants to go to and locate in a county that doesn't have a hospital.
So the other place we're looking for political reaction is the place we've been looking for political reaction on virtually everything these days, the 6th District congressional race to replace Tom Price. And, of course, we're looking to see how Republican candidates among the many are weighing in on this. And, again, there's mixed reaction about that. You've got Bob Gray, who's the former Johns Creek councilman, who says this isn't what I thought we were going to do with repeal and replace. Judson Hill says I don't think it's quite where we want it, but
there's a lot of fudging going
on
here.
There,
a lot of qualifiers there.
Except not Bruce Lavelle, the Dunwoody jeweler who was an early, one of the first African-American supporters of Donald Trump. And he says, I stand by President Trump 100%.
And that's going to be a really interesting point. My friend George Cheatham had on GeorgiaPoll.com today had an interesting point. There are 60,000 voters in the 6th District who are employed in healthcare, employed at universities, or this is an educated electorate here. Donald Trump barely carried it. I think 48% to Hillary Clinton's 47%.
So is it going to be a referendum on Trump here?
I think it's, you know what, if Democrats are smart, you have John Ossoff and Ron Slotin in the race. They're two of the 18 candidates. If they are smart, they'll make this a referendum on healthcare. The first vote, the first round of voting is April 18th. That's going to be dead center in the healthcare debate. The runoff is June 20th. I don't think this issue is going to be settled by then.
No, you just made an excellent point, I think. You know, if you're a Democrat in this race, don't make this. You may not want to make the same mistake that Hillary Clinton did in the presidential campaign to run because Trump is incompetent. You've got to have something else to run on. And man, healthcare might just be the issue that's much more significant than trying to tell people to vote for you because they agree with you that Donald Trump isn't doing a good job right now.
Yeah, the problem is, of course, you're going to have to kind of blaze a trail on where you want to go on health care.
Yeah, and that's right.
That becomes the hard part.
That's exactly right.
Oh, who knew it was so complicated?
Not me. No one knew. No one knew this.
President Trump has said a lot of really fascinating things. He's given us a lot of fodder. But I really think that who knew healthcare could be so complicated may have been one of the great lines in his early presidency.
I think we're going to see that one in 2020.
Yeah.
Probably.
We've only got a few minutes left, Jim. I'd love to turn to a couple of other quick issues. New York Times today went after – I'm sorry, that's not a fair characterization. They wrote a piece about the fact that we already know, because we were here for it, that Sonny Perdue, agriculture nominee, is he's had some ethical issues that he's had to contend with in the past.
Now I am journalistically, I'm very respectful. I would never, ever refer to a piece as a clip job, but I will point out that that every point in that article had been previously reported by the AJC. Basically, it takes a look at Sonny's 8-year tenure as governor, and there have been some lapses.
Yeah,
and we don't know if that's holding up the FBI approval or the kind of the processing of the paperwork or not.
Yeah, I apologize. Of course, you reported this. It's just the fact that it now makes the national news too means it's going to come up in
absolutely.
The hearings.
And there was a very very blatant case in a kind of a midnight. I think it's the final day of a legislative session, where his accountant, who is also was also the majority leader in the House,
Larry O'Neill,
yep. He puts out he kind of makes a little adjustment to a tax bill, gives one person in the entire state a tax advantage, and that just happened to be Sonny Perdue.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be the Democrats will make as much of it as they can.
It's not going to stop.
No, he's still going to win confirmation.
In this environment, it's not disqualifying.
It doesn't hurt to point out that this story was peddled vigorously by a Democratic operative who has had good reason for hating Sonny Perdue for a very long time.
I don't know who you're talking about. But I think I know he works in Marietta.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The Democrats have really tried to get this issue out. Another quick one before we leave. Interesting story, Jim, as the legislature comes down to the final days, and we deal with this sort of alternative to the Opportunity School District, which in the new version would set up this independent from the Department of Education oversight agency that would help with failing school. Okay, we know that's happening. And now we learn from reading in your paper, Greg Bluestein reports that Nathan Deal has really been aggressive in going after school superintendent Richard Woods, saying you haven't done it in terms of failing schools.
No, and Woods apparently has approached a few legislators saying, look, I ought to be the guy who's in charge of this because I'm the state school superintendent. But you have got a long parade of bills and moves by governors that have kind of slowly moved the authority over education away from the state schools department, the department who's the executive in the Department of Education, over into the governor's office.
All right.
And this is just another one.
All right, we'll watch that. Okay, Jim, I told people we'd give them a little preview, and we've only got about a minute left of what you're writing about for Sunday.
The Friendship Force of Atlanta is 40 years old, and it's now falling under the shadow of Donald Trump. No longer do people want to know if going to Turkey or to Morocco will Americans be safe. People in Morocco and Turkey want to know if they'll be safe when they come to the U.S.
Wow. Friendship Force started by Ted.
Embraced. I'm sure he endorsed it. It was really embraced by Jimmy and Rosalynn Carter.
Yeah, I think Ted Turner was. I thought he was. They did make a trip to Russia way back then. And if we find out that any associates of Donald Trump's were on that Friendship Force trip, it's going to be a scandal, Galloway.
Something to write about.
There you go. We are really out of time for today's show. I really appreciate all of you who joined us by Twitter. There are a lot of you. Keep the conversation going. You should be following us on Twitter if you're not. At least I hope you would. At PoliticsGPB. Remember that you can always subscribe to the Political Rewind podcast so that you can listen to it even when we're not on the air. Also, we like to point out that the AJC now runs every Political Rewind. You can listen to the audio stream of it at the AJC Political Insider blog. In fact, you'll post that in a little while.
I hope to have it by 6 this afternoon.
By 6. All right. Look for it there. Andy Miller, what a pleasure to have you here.
Glad to be here, Bill.
Thanks so much. And Jim, I know you're not with us on Monday, but we look forward to having you back here a week from today. Monday, our booking producer, Lisa Clark, has a great lineup. We got Buddy Darden, we got Brian Robinson, we've got Lori Geary, and from Bloomberg News, Connor Sen. So it should be a terrific show, and we hope you join us then. I'm Bill Nygut. Thanks for listening to us today. Have a wonderful weekend.